100 Townsend, East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com.
We're beginning to pull together the new budget for WILL Radio, and the program schedule we can provide on this station depends upon meeting our fundraising goal by June 30th. You can still help. If it's time for you to renew your membership in the Friends of WILL, you can go online to will.uiuc.edu and take care of it. Thank you.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is Focus 580, sitting in the chair this morning for David Inge. In this second hour of Focus 580, the 11 o'clock hour Central Time, we'll be talking about organic standards and how things have changed in that industry and how the organic organizations are using different marketing techniques to get their word out, and what has happened over the last decade or so with organic crop production. And our guest today will be Peter Goldsmith, who is an ag economist at the University of Illinois that I work with, and he's in Mumford Hall. We both work for the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences here. And Bill Wolf, who is the founder and president of Wolf & Associates Incorporated, and we'll tell you just a bit more about him. That organization provides strategic consulting, management support, organic product development, and the profitability analysis for firms entering into the organic industry. Good morning to you, Bill. Thanks for joining us by phone. Where are you located this morning, by the way?
Good morning, Todd. Thank you for inviting me. I just returned from a trip overseas to Europe and Iceland, and my offices are in Newcastle, Virginia, near Virginia Tech, near Blacksburg.
I wasn't quite sure. I saw that you were on Ray Street there in Newcastle, but wasn't sure whether that was where we had called you or whether you were off gallivanting across the globe.
No, I got back late last night.
You know, what I'd like to do is to start by talking about the definition of organic, and I imagine you have a pretty good handle on this. It changed in the 90s as USDA and the organizations just realized how big the growth might be in the organic industry and the need for organic foods, organically grown foods across the world would be. What happened during the 90s, and how did that definition change?
Well, I think that what really happened is that we moved from a philosophical definition to a regulated, government-controlled definition. But the intentions remained the same. In other words, the word organic still stands for a commitment to agricultural practices that strive for a balance with nature, using methods and materials which are of low impact to the environment, and basically doing it the gentlest way possible. But in practical terms, the term now is controlled by a federal law that can be enforced with fines and prison. So it is now a production system managed in accordance with the Organic Foods Production Act, which was passed in 1990, and then took 12 years of regulatory hearings to actually be fully implemented by the USDA under the National Organic Program.
And it took such a long time because the small organic farmers were arguing with the larger corporations about what the standard should be? Is that a decent assessment or not?
I think not. I think there were a lot of issues we had never fully vetted. I think that there was some of that, but fundamentally, clarifying all kinds of issues as to exactly what we mean when we say we should use compost in organic farming, for example.
Mm-hmm.
At what point can you use raw manure versus compost? Organic now has a clear regulatory requirement as to what point in time you must switch. Raw manures can only be used on fields where you have at least 120 days prior to the harvest of a crop. Organic, in fact, is the only food system that regulates the application of manure. After that time, you must use compost. In other words, there's concern not only about the potential for E. coli, but there's also concern about the biological systems in the soil. So those kinds of details were not articulated that well. If you read the original guidelines for organic foods production that were written in 1984 and published by the Organic Foods Production Association, which is now known as OTA, or the Organic Trade Association, and that document is now 21 years old, and you read the regulations today, the actual principles are the same. The concepts behind the rule. In other words, in both cases, you have a third-party certification by an independent agency, and today that agency has to be accredited by the USDA. You have an audit trail so that you can determine where the food is coming from, or the fiber, or the cotton, or the clothing. You have an annual independent inspection to verify compliance with organic regulations. You have a defined conversion period, generally 3 years. In other words, the soils must have been managed in using organic methods for at least 3 years. And most importantly, you have a sustainable farm plan that you have to develop on the farm, a plan that shows what your methods are and how you're going to manage the soil sustainably and manage so that you have the most ecologically appropriate pest control methods. As at heart of this, when someone looks at a packaged product at the store level, the important thing is that the real value is that it's a production method that's being verified on the farm, and the real value is being created on the farm. After that, the integrity of that product has to be maintained throughout the process in terms of handling, processing, and so everyone involved is responsible to maintain that better seal. That's kind of a quick view, but fundamentally, I think the challenge has always been that we've taken a philosophy and codified it. In other words, the philosophy said, work with nature, improve soil fertility, reduce agricultural pollution, recycle within the system, increase biodiversity, and the principle that healthy plants come from healthy soils and that we'll have healthy people and healthy animals as a result.
It's interesting that you mentioned the OTA, the Organic Trade Association, and I'll come back to this in just a second with a question that I'd like to ask Peter Goldsmith here in studio. But I'm wondering, just one more question on how things changed with the implementation of the new organic standards. Did it open up, for instance, the Organic Crop Improvement Association, which I believe was the national organization that was doing most of the certification prior to 1990 and probably does a lot of it still, to larger organizations and companies, for instance, the ADMs of the world, to be able to allow them to have a broader definition of organic in order for the marketing channels to be larger in size?
OCIA, the certification agency you mentioned, was joined in the 90s by a number of competing certifiers.
Okay.
So we now have over 90 certification agencies accredited by the USDA. The trend to have larger companies involved in organic, I think, was driven more by the fact that we are now a substantial growing segment of food production. Organic represented a tiny, tiny field in 1990. It was perhaps $700 million in sales. Today, at $13 billion, it's the fastest growing segment of the organic food. It's growing in double digits, over 20% a year most years, and has been for 15 years. So what's happened is that the major food companies are paying attention and looking at participating, and that is occurring by their own brands. It's also occurring through acquisition. I think fundamentally there are really probably two things that have happened, and that is that in the late 80s and early 90s, there was not a lot of processed organic food. Most organic food was produce directly sold locally, and some juices and some very simple processed foods, but we didn't have complex processed foods. So during the regulatory process, that was one of the more controversial issues of what materials could be used. Could baking powder be used? Could vitamin C be used? Could citric acid be used for stabilizing packaged foods? And that became a major factor in the ability of some of the food processing companies to enter the field. In addition, the concept of organic, many people felt, really was about food, some other important social values and food nutrition values. In other words, could sugar be organic? Could you grow organic cane and then have organic white sugar? Could white flour be organic? Could you have an organic Twinkie, essentially? And the fact is that the organic community debated this and said that there are other claims that can be made about food, local food dollars, worker ownership, how workers are treated. All those are important issues, but fundamentally, the term organic is about the production method itself. And those additional claims and additional values should be addressed, but are not addressed under the term organic.
Peter, when I was asked to host Focus 580 and set in for David Inge, they wanted to know what I'd like to talk about. And this particular topic was precipitated from an email, like many of us here at the university get from time to time, that came from a farm broadcaster friend of mine in Peoria. And this email just had a link in it and said, Todd, who should we talk to at the university about these issues? And the Organic Trade Association had sponsored, and I'm not sure that it's the sole sponsor, but at least they have a link to a little short movie that's a spoof of Star Wars on their website called Store Wars. And this particular person had said, well, in this Store Wars movie, it shows a grocery cart going through the store in a very space-like fashion, and it's firing lasers at all kinds of produce, and then there are bananas that are marching that are supposed to be the bad bananas, and they're carrying, they look a little bit like Rambo, I suppose. But anyway, the idea was that in this particular movie, it highlighted some of the differences between organic production and normal production, and the fact that they're not using the pesticides. And, of course, it suggested that pesticide use was bad and many other things. And the question was, in my mind, well, is this an idea of pesticides being the issue here, that they're really rotten for the environment, if you can say that? Or is it the fact that the Organic Trade Association is playing off its strengths and segmenting the market in the way that you and I've discussed, I suppose, over time, that you can have a commodity, or if you segment it out, you can reap more rewards from that segmented part of the marketplace. So how does that all play into when you look and study organics or commodities, the beef industry, the pork industry, how does segmenting the market out help reap more benefits to the farmers, to the players along the line?
Right. I think your focus on segmentation is very, very important, and that's what is really powerful, unique, and important about organic for agriculture, in that the producers have been able to deliver a production system, and Bill explained it really, really nicely in codifying this philosophical understanding about farming practices, and consumers value that. And from a marketing perspective, it's just a form of differentiation. And the claim of organic and the stamp of organic is nothing more or nothing less than saying that the practices behind this product have been codified and are such and such. And consumers value that, much like any other form of differentiation or strength of a brand. This happens to be a generic brand, the Green Seal. But it is a commitment that says behind this product, certain practices have occurred. And what's very important about this generic brand versus branding in general is that the value has been created, and I don't want to say all of it, but much of it captured by producers, which is a very good thing for rural communities and the agricultural sector.
The listeners, this morning we're talking with Peter Goldsmith, ag economist from the University of Illinois, and Bill Wolf, the founder and president of Wolf & Associates, about organic food production, how it happens in the United States today, how it has changed in the last decade and a half. If you'd like to join our conversation, the number to call is 1-800-222-9455. Again, that's 800-222-9455. Or locally, 217-333-9455. 9455, of course, stands for WILL. Bill, I take it you're familiar with this Store Wars movie trailer that is on the website. I think the address is, is it OTA.org? Is that correct?
OTA.com.
.com.
Yeah, I was, the OTA is the Organic Trade Association, and they co-produced this spoof with a movie producer, and released it May 10th. They released it in conjunction with the annual All Things Organic trade show, in which was held at McCormick Center in Chicago a few weeks ago. And basically, you've captured it very well. It was kind of a fun story, and you can find more details on it at OTA's website.
I think for me, I saw it, and it didn't, frankly, and I'm a farm broadcaster, so sometimes that tends to jade you, or you might think that would jade you to one side or the other, but it didn't bother me in particular. What I found interesting was the first thing I actually did was to go to the website and look up who the members of the OTA were. And ADM, of course, was there. They listed them alphabetically, so Archer Daniels Midland showed up to begin with. And then the one I thought was the funniest, given what I saw in the movie and the bananas, was that Chiquita was also a member of this organization. Did they? And how do you interact with the OTA? Because we contacted them initially and got to you. So tell me about your interaction, and then if you've heard from Chiquita at all.
I am a volunteer and was on OTA's board in the 1990s. I was president of the board of directors for several years, and then moved on to help found a research institute in the organic field. I do not know the interaction between Chiquita and OTA. I do know that the process within OTA is one in which OTA has about 1,600 members, and some members are very small natural foods co-ops, and mm-hmm. some are companies like Whole Foods and Wild Oats, and others are companies like General Mills and Heinz and Dean Foods and Smucker's. All of whom have organic products. I mean, Heinz has launched their organic ketchup, as has Campbell's with their organic juices. So there's a broad range of organic products entering the marketplace. Almost every major food processor in the country is looking at having a product or two in the organic category. Basically, OTA doesn't usually take a position of anti-anybody. Mm-hmm. But rather, organic is about a choice that people can make in the marketplace. Organic has grown today to be around between $13 and $14 billion in sales, a little over between 2 and 3% of the total food dollar. And at that rate, it's continuing to grow in double digits. At 20% a year, it's becoming an important factor. But really, what's exciting to look at the farm level is that many of the practices that are introduced by creative organic farmers become the methods that go beyond organic farming. I've worked with large growers who only have a couple percent of their acreage certified, but in fact see many of these methods really work well, and then introduce them throughout across the board, regardless of how they're being labeled. And so we do see dramatic reductions in soil erosion and in chemical applications and in use of toxic materials, both in crop production and in use in livestock. We see dramatic reductions in hormone and antibiotic use in organic meat production.
We have a caller on the line from Indiana on our toll-free line. Thank you, caller, for joining us this morning. How are you today?
Hello.
Do you have a question or comment you'd like to ask this morning?
Yes, I hope it can be answered. Unfortunately, I think I may be so far out of date it doesn't even make sense to ask it. I'm going to ask it anyway. When I was in graduate school in the 60s, when a lot of this the organic stuff started, it was almost a political statement. I don't know whether it is now, especially you mentioned Heinz and Campbell's. I figure that that's long gone by now. But I remember people making rather extravagant claims about organic food for your health and hair and toenails and everything else that come under the sun. I was wondering now that it's become a capitalistic thing, basically. In this organization where they make out the principles of what organic farming is, I wonder if they still make any claims in regard to health issues, in the broad sense. It's not wearing copper bracelets, but it's, next to it, and thank God. I wonder if you can make some comments about that.
Peter, I have some comments. Would you like me to go forward?
Yeah, go ahead, Bill, and I'll follow you.
Sure. First of all, there are some very specific things that are proven and provable, and we can look at it both from why people buy organic and also from the actual data. There is now an organic center for education and information that is focusing just on this topic of documenting the health benefits of organic and determining what's true and what isn't. And there is a separate web page that people can go to just for that information. It's called the Organic. It's www.organic-center.org.
Hmm.
And the two benefits that have already clearly been documented by a number of studies is that organic food does reduce pesticide exposure. What that turns into is, there's a lot of argument about, but organic foods are significantly less likely to contain detectable pesticide levels. And organic diets can reduce children's exposure to organophosphates to below EPA chronic reference doses. The second benefit is that eating organic meats definitely reduces the consumption of antibiotics and artificial hormones. The recent comparative studies indicate that organic farming and food processing does elevate antioxidant levels in food, that there are nutritional differences in materials. For example, there was a study done recently that compared ketchups, and organic ketchup consistently contained at least 50% higher levels of lycopene. So there's a number of facts coming through now. Same is true with antioxidant levels in strawberries. So the thought that organic could be healthier seems to be connected to, in fact, the method of growing, producing higher nutrient content in the food in a more balanced form.
Closing in on the bottom of the hour here, listeners, at 11:30, we're talking with Bill Wolf and Peter Goldsmith about organic foods. Do you want to comment on the claims? And
yeah, I thought it was an excellent question about the relationship, especially here at the university, between science and organic. And that's been, I think, all along been a very delicate, difficult issue. And the USDA navigated that fairly well by creating really what was a set of practices that were not that had no scientific claims to them, so that you would not be able to say that your toenails would be longer or shorter because they were organic. But it was a practice, and consumers could make their own choice about buying a product that was produced in such and such a way, and let the market determine it. That being said, it's very, very important for those people looking at organic foods to understand what and where the scientific claims come from. Are they coming from the industry itself? Are they coming from independent research? And this is very, very important. I think this is maybe the next wave of activity in organic, is trying to provide some formality and rigor to the process, and whether it is, in fact, better for you, or in other cases, it may not be, because it may have higher because you might not be able to use a bactericide or some product. It may be have higher bacteria loads or whatever. But the point is that scientific and research is really, really important and would serve only help organic to make its way in the marketplace.
We have a caller on line one from Urbana. Good morning to you. Do you have a question?
Yes. I have recently retired from farming, and for the last 8 years, I had 30 acres of certified organic acreage down in Douglas County. And it was an interesting experience. I learned a lot, and it was also quite frustrating. And the whole thing abounds in ironies. One of the things when I first got into it was the promise of being able to sell organic soybeans for $18 to $22 a bushel, you know, forever. And at the time, some of my friends at the university were saying, well, you know, China has vast acreage there that has never been treated chemically, and they're going to certify, and they have got, you know, low cost of labor, and, you know, your soybean market is going to disappear. And, you know, indeed, by the time I had gone through the three-year process, the value of my organic soybeans was down to, you know, $10 to $13 per bushel, which changed the economics, you know, quite dramatically. The thing that I found ironic and frustrating was the organic movement, which is, what, several generations old probably now, originally had a vision of some alternative agriculture to the industrial model, which is where our country was headed at the time. But at the end of the process, in order to preserve the value of their branding, which they had worked at for several generations, you have to have controls so that people know what the brand means. But the result was a pile of regulations when I went through the certification process. You had a group of people who were essentially anti-bureaucratic, people who wanted to work in the soil, spending huge amounts of time learning the minutiae of the regulations on what you could and couldn't do. So it ends up being a kind of a bureaucratic nightmare to maintain your certification. Hmm. And then the other frustration I had was and I can't address the nutritional side of it, but on the production side, I found myself in a morally compromised situation because I did and do care about the soil and soil quality. And a lot of the soil quality problems that we have here in central Illinois really came from that 100 years of farming, which was organic, and the only method of weed control was cultivation. So that rather than a best practices approach, because the definition of organic, you know, focused on this distinction between synthesized chemicals and naturally occurring chemicals, I found that I was required to really beat up the soil in order to have any chance of raising a crop. And where in my conventional crops, using a minimum tillage approach and a judicious use of chemicals, I could raise a crop and be profitable with two tillage passes. On the organic side, you know, I was getting up to 8 or 10 tillage passes, which hurts the organic matter, organic content in the soil. Every time you till, you oxidize organic matter and so on. And so I found oftentimes the organic is sold as this kind of idealized system where you can do no harm if you follow the organic approach, and you only do harm if you use any synthesized chemicals. And so I found a kind of straitjacket there made me do things that I knew were bad for the soil, but I had to do it because it was the only way to maintain my organic certification. I have a lot of other things I could talk about, too, but that's probably enough for now.
Caller, if you want to hang on the line just a bit, I'd like for you to stay in the conversation simply because you've done this in the past. We do have a caller from Wisconsin on line two as well, and I do want to get them in and see if we can have them ask the question. Oh, we cannot. Can we put both of them online at the same time? I'm getting to know, so we'll have to let you go, and we'll comment on what you've had to say here in just a bit. But from Wisconsin, they've been online for quite some time, and since they're calling in from Wisconsin, I want to make sure that I don't run their long-distance bill up too much. Good morning to you, and you have a question. Where are you calling from, by the way, in Wisconsin?
I'm calling from Milwaukee area.
All right. And are you listening on the web or on?
I am. I'm listening on the web.
Okay, thank you.
I actually have a question regarding food products and the USDA seal. I'm wondering if products such as breads are going to be able to continue to use the USDA organic seal under Harvey versus Veneman. And I can take my comments off the air, too.
Thank you very much. And I believe that would be a question, Bill, for you to answer.
Boy, I'd rather talk about the soybeans and how to grow soybeans with the original intent of organic. But the Harvey, we haven't talked much about the Harvey case, but there is a lawsuit that has been working its way through the courts that said that the rule itself contained allowance for synthetic compounds in food in processed foods that was not in the original law. And the court ruled, in fact, in favor of the plaintiff and ordered the USDA to modify the regulation. What that means is that there were a number of synthetic materials that had been reviewed very carefully through a public process through the National Organic Standards Board that were put on a national list of allowed synthetic materials for use in food processing, things like baking powder, vitamin C, citric acid, some of the things we actually talked about earlier, lecithin, and those materials included even yeast and pectin as a thickening agent. That list is public. It's listed on the web. The reviews, the chemical reviews for them are quite detailed. And at least for the moment, we are heading towards a change in labeling in which products that currently are labeled with the organic seal, with the USDA organic seal as USDA organic, meaning 95% or more plus use of some of these allowed materials, they would have to drop back to a 70% made with 70% organic and could not use the USDA seal. There are products on the marketplace, just as there are local producers of produce that aren't shipped long distances, that could still make that claim. I mean, for example, in the Chicago area, there is a bread product that you can find called Nokomis Organic Breads that would still be able to bear the organic seal because they don't use any of these leavening agents. But there are some national brands of organic breads that would have to either reformulate or change the law or drop back to a made-with-organic-wheat formula. So this process of developing the regulation is ongoing and fairly intense in the sense that it's what we're doing is going through a process of vetting exactly what everybody means in a very public way. And I don't think we're going to see a totally stable definition in terms of details for some time. This change that I've just described probably will take another 2 years to be implemented through the courts and through another federal register process.
Listeners, this morning we're talking about, I suppose, for all intents and purposes, the economics of organic production and how that crop is marketed here in the U.S. and other places around the world. If you'd like to phone in with your question, the toll-free number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-WILL. Or locally, 217-333-9455.
Yeah, I want to get back. The gentleman from Douglas County raised a number of really, really important issues for those who produce organic products in general, but also specifically for kind of the Illinois, Indiana producers interested in organic grains. And that's that one of the things that was not very clear or made clear to a lot of those producers who wanted to produce specialty crops, or in this case, organic, was that these markets are very, very dynamic and that premiums rarely in any business stay high forever because buyers just don't like paying high prices. They like paying lower prices for their products that they purchase rather than higher. And also higher premiums attract entrants, whether they be Chinese producers or in Illinois. We have a number of complementary relationships in Argentina in terms of producing organic products to complement the Illinois supply. So there are lots of entrants that come in. And so that what happens over time is that producers always have to, when you're in a differentiated market as opposed to a commodity market, is always be aware that it's going to be very fluid and that things are going to change. And that means, in the case of organic soybeans, becoming more efficient because there's going to be more supply in the market. And it did outstrip demand, and premiums have fallen. So that's something that's very, very different than when we produce commodity products, where we pretty much know what's going to happen in terms of the marketing of the crop and the demand that's out there. Marketing in a differentiated product or a specialty product like organic is a challenge, and it's not going to be the same from year to year.
Peter, this is Bill. I'd agree with you to an extent, but the fact is that the soybean premium has stayed up there to a great extent. The current feedstock price for soybeans for organic is in the $14.75 range in the Minneapolis market. And for tofu, it's $20 to $22 for tofu type. And if you were growing natto beans, you'd get $35 to $40. My feeling about the gentleman, I don't want to, who was growing the 30 acres in Douglas County, is that the key issue is setting things up with a buyer in advance. China soybeans have not been that successful in entering the U.S. There's been talk of it, but the fact is that between shipping and other issues, even the Brazilian soybeans have not dominated the market here. There's a huge new demand for organic soy because of the huge growth in organic dairy and in organic meat products and in organic hog products. So the demand has actually continued fairly strong, and there was actually a soybean shortage this past year in organic because of the weak crop production. And my feeling is that a lot of this has to do with growing technique. That cultivation discussion is about learning the timing of planting and learning about intercropping and new and interesting methods to grow beans, even using organic methods that don't use tillage. There is some good research going on at universities, and then there's institutes like the Michael Fields Agricultural Research Institute that are working with the University of Wisconsin. So I think that there's two things there: the production method and learning those tools, and then finding your market connections, whether it's value added or contracting, because people are still making good money as organic farmers.
Bill, which does your consulting firm work with mostly, the producer-supplier end or the end-user side? And if it's the end-user, what kind of clientele list do you have?
We work with farmer groups. We work with companies like Driscoll Strawberry. I've done work helping them develop their organic berries. We've done work with the Foreign Agricultural Service on their international standards. We've worked with food companies who are looking to develop products. And I'll disclose that I've done some work with the Michael Fields Institute and the Nokomis Bakery I mentioned, mm-hmm. because I've seen them working directly with farmers to contract to link the farmer to the food to the consumer. I do some work, volunteer with some food co-ops like the Roanoke Natural Foods Co-op here, to connect local produce growers with local restaurants.
We have more callers on the line. Line 1 is joining us now to ask a question. Good morning to you. What is your question, please?
I'm the person from Douglas County.
Oh, sure.
Called in earlier, and then you went on to the Wisconsin. And,
yes.
And I'm interested in their perspective on some of the issues in terms of sticking with a narrow definition of organic rather than best practices. Because I think for a lot of consumers, there simply is a lot of confusion about what those distinctions might be. And, you know, the one thing I have to say, because one of your experts was referring to the research that's being done on alternative methods to raising organic soybeans and so on without relying on the tillage. And, you know, one thing that is an unequivocal benefit from the organic movement is that it has spurred a lot of research now that there is a branded market for organic. And I think even here at the University of Illinois, 20 years ago, there likely was almost no interest in organic production methods, and I'm aware that now there is. And so I think everyone benefits from broadening the field of research. But from the perspective of someone in central Illinois, central Indiana, in this area, if they're not interested in crop-to-table produce, and some people are, but, you know, let's be honest about that. To do that in this area, you're looking at an economic lifestyle that the majority of their customers would not be willing to live on. You know, I buy organic produce at the Urbana Market, and you know, I know a bit about the sacrifices these people make financially in order for me to have a lovely organic salad. But for your central Illinois farmers in this corn and soybean and wheat belt, you can't go and, in advance of the process, lock up a market for your soybeans that's going to be predictable. I was a part of a movement to start an organic marketing co-op here. And the buyers, the dairy farmers who are buying my organic corn, were undercapitalized. Rather than being able to deliver my crop and get a check the same day or within several days, which you can with the commodity crops, I waited months and sometimes months and months, you know, 6 months to collect. So people need to be aware that it's true. The desire for organic milk drives the need for organic corn. But, you know, it's a tough, tough way to go. And in the end, I would like to have milk that is free of hormones. I would like to have beef that's hormone-free. But, of course, that can be done without requiring that everything in the food chain down the line, say, requiring it, that organic grain be fed to that beef. I don't know if there's any studies that would show that organic corn produces a better quality of beef than non-organic corn if the other parameters are the same. No antibiotics, no growth hormones.
Is your question that you want clarification between what USDA's rules and regulations say organic is today and what, for instance, the Organic Crop Improvement Association had said prior to that on certification? Is that right?
Well,
I mean, because one was more stringent than the other.
I mean, I think one of the questions that the call raises is important about the certification of one set of practices. While it should be known that the USDA certifies all sorts of brand claims. Natural, hormone-free, whatever a company comes along and wants to make a claim, they sit there and make sure that that the claim is in fact true, and there is a whole third-party certification, et cetera, et cetera. So organic is just one of many sorts of programs that the USDA is now involved in as the market has moved from commodities to differentiated products. They had to come in and provide some discipline, and that's what they do. They are not saying that one is better than the other. That's left to the consumer and left to the research community.
Yeah. The fellow in Douglas County, I'm sorry, I don't know your first name.
Danny.
Danny, I think your question about this best practices versus the synthetics versus natural is a tough one. It's been going, been in discourse, at least in the sustainable agriculture and organic farming community for 20 years. I agree with you in principle that the thin line there should not be, you know, synthetics bad, natural good, as a rule. And in fact, we attempted to capture that in the law and allow for a process to apply for the use of synthetic compounds that were in line with the 7 written principles in the law of for organic management. And there are a number of synthetics that have gone through that process and been added. The challenge is that it is a fairly long process. I think there is some data to show that using natural fertilizers produces a different protein in some crops under some conditions. There's the beginning of that data, and that beginning data indicates that there is actually can be a cellular difference. And that's an exciting part of the puzzle to me. So what Organic was trying to do was really document an entire process. By the way, I really do agree with you that it is a volatile situation, and when you know the ideal is really to, as a farmer, be participating in the value-added piece of the puzzle in some way, or participating with more local farmers in a contract basis. And I've seen some really good models for that. I think Organic Valley, the large farmer co-op of organic dairy farmers, is starting to try to work directly with grain producers to solve the kind of problem you were describing about financing and the payments for grains. On that note, one of the projects we're working on now is the development of a green organic bank to help finance that process.
We have just about 7 minutes left, maybe a little less than that, and 2 phone calls to get in. We have a caller on line two from here in Urbana, and 1 from Bloomington. In Urbana, what's your question, please?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that one caller from Douglas County, and I was thinking, you know, the organic market is certainly not as large as the overall commercial market, but it still is pretty much a mass market, and mass markets are just tend to be uniform by nature, and so seems to me that bureaucracies are just part of that, and that if a person just wants to just do some farming and do it the way however they want to or whatever they think is best, you're not going to be able to sell to a mass market, even if it is the organic mass market. And if you wanted to develop your own, you know, best practices or optimal practices or your own style, I mean, you could maybe make up flyers and hand them out to your friends and neighbors describing, you know, your practices and why they're better or whatever. But that it's just a different kind of a market. And then the marketing, I guess, the style of farming and the style of the marketing seems like they would have to, you know, match each other.
Peter, if you could address that very quickly, and I know you have a program called Market Maker that can be found on the web, and we've got very little time. So.
Yeah, I think the caller is entirely right that when we think about the organic brand and how it competes with other brands and how producers establish brands, that's really just a form of differentiation that producers, it's a difficult, challenging marketing problem to establish yourself as a brand. But it has been done. It's done in Europe quite extensively with origin-based brands that have practices tied to them, and farmers own and control them.
And then very quickly, you have a way actually on the website with your Market Maker?
One of the ways, and we've talked in this conversation a lot about the importance of marketing and beginning with your customer, whether that be a livestock feeder or whether that be a retailer, manufacturer, and understanding their needs. So we've developed a web-based software called marketmaker.com. On the site, it's based on Illinois. It allows suppliers, producers, to look and understand markets, locate customers, and begin to make connections and contacts with them. So that's it's a web-based, map-based piece of software that's been quite successful.
We'll put that up as a disclaimer for me. You and I work together, and part of my job is to know about things like Market Maker and make sure that other people know where that happens to be. Okay, we do have a line four caller on the toll-free calling from Bloomington, Indiana. Good morning, and your question, the final one for the morning.
Good morning. I encourage you to pick up on this program again, but next time do a program on Beyond Organic, because there's a movement of people who have lost their enthusiasm for the organic standards and are moving way beyond that. And this is a topic that is really ripe for presentation and discussion. Are either one of your guests familiar with the phenomena I'm referring to?
No, I'm not familiar with it.
I am, and I appreciate and agree with it. I had kind of referenced it earlier when I said that there are other claims that go beyond organic. I think that what I think in the marketplace is that you see the opportunity to have a claim on a product that says it was produced using organic methods, but that its food dollar miles were local. So there's a local verification, and there's direct marketing, and there is marketing to show that the farmer was treated right. And
well,
there are. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Going back to the Douglas County farmer, and he touched on this quite wonderfully, and that is the aspect of soil stewardship, because so much of the organic movement is not particularly knowledgeable about soil science. And this is the next hierarchy of extraordinary growing of fruits, vegetables, and grain, and that actually is what my interest is in Beyond Organic. And there's a group of people who are not satisfied with the do and don'ts, primarily the don'ts of the organic certification and standards, but they're interested in moving way beyond that. Does this make sense to you?
Sure. What you're really saying is go back to the nutritional quality of the growing method that produces a higher nutrition.
Caller, I'm interested in talking to you maybe a little off the air, if you could call back or write me an email here. My address is tgleason@uiuc.edu. I'm always interested in these kinds of things and maybe setting up something for the future. The phone number you can find on the website directly to the station is 217-333-0850. I'll be done here in about 2 minutes, 3 minutes, actually. And we would like to thank our guest, Bill Wolf, who's the founder and president of Wolf & Associates, joining us from his Newcastle, Virginia office. Thank you very much, Bill. Any final comments before I let you go for the day?
Well, Todd, I want to thank you for having me. I do think that what we're seeing is just the beginning of a shift, and organic is really just part of a larger shift.